Cunningham for another extraordinary message on Gill Athletics Connections.
All right, welcome back. Here we are at the Gill Athletics Connections podcast. So happy that you would join us here on the show. I'm excited. Even, you know, here's what I hate. Let me get on my step stool here for a second. I don't like April Fools. I don't like the jokes. I don't know if I liked them as a kid, but I certainly don't like them as an adult. So I'm just going to put that out there. There is no April Fool's joke here. You've seen who the guest is today. It really is that guest. We're not playing games. I just don't like them. I'm on a crusade to stop April Fool's jokes. So even though you might be listening here on April Fool's on April 1st, there's no fools here. We've got a great guest. I am super excited. I'm going to hop right into it. Help me welcome the head coach from Butler Community College in the great state of Kansas. Help me welcome the wise, the wonderful Mr. Greg Franklin. Greg, how are you today, sir?
Good. How are you doing?
Man, I'm doing great. You know, when we're recording this, it's the weekend, the week after the NCAA Division I, Division II, Division III, and so we're 2 weeks from the Junior College National Championship. So I'm kind of coming off of a little bit of a high. I love championship time. I mean, it's like my most favorite time of the year. So I'm kind of just, you know, kind of in a lull until, you know, like Penn Relays, Drake Relays starts kicking back in, conference meets, national, just kind of keeps building up, man. How are you doing after you had nationals a couple weeks ago?
Oh, I'm doing good, man. We're having to get back at it, man. It wasn't my expectations, but hey, we'll get it going for outdoor.
You know, track is unique, right? You just went through a full indoor season, indoor conference, indoor nationals. You don't have 1 second to take a breath because you've got outdoor staring right at you. In fact, have you already had an outdoor meet, or do you have one coming up this weekend?
We got one this week. So we actually had a week where some people recovered, then start getting ready for outdoor. So we run in North Texas this week.
Yeah, see, it's just, boy, you're right back into it, and you're going to blink, and it's going to be outdoor conference time, outdoor nationals time. I mean, it never stops with track and field. Yeah, it moves. Exactly. Well, I'm excited to talk to you, Greg, first of all, to learn about your journey, which we'll start here in a second. But also, you know, I spent a year as the head coach of Neosho County Community College in the Kansas Jayhawk Conference, and it really affected me positively. So anytime I get a junior college coach here, and specifically a Kansas Jayhawk community college coach here, it really means a lot to me. I can't wait to talk about Butler and talk about the conference and just some of the great coaches you have there, the great rivalries that you have there. I'm really excited about that, man. I really have a special place in my heart for junior college coaches and athletes, and especially the Kansas Jayhawk one. So I'm excited about that to get into that here in a little bit. So why don't we start, you know, somewhere, Greg, assuming that you were an athlete, coaching had to switch from something that was done to you. Hey, Greg, go run this, go throw that, to something that you could actually do. Like maybe it could be conceived as like an actual career for you. Where does track and field, track coaching, where does it start for you?
Track coaching really started after I graduated from Middle Tennessee. So I graduated, and then I kind of was at the point, like I was starting with psychology. And then my neighbor, my wife was like, hey, our neighbor got a kid. He runs high school track. His mom wanted to know, can you work with him? And then I worked with him, you know, on a couple of things. And then I was like, oh, I mean, it was pretty fun. But then I still really wasn't bought into it. I think after I graduated the next year, it was a girl I ran with. I helped her out, like coaching her for Middle Tennessee. And then she did extremely well. So then after that year, I moved back to Alabama. And one of my friends that I went to high school with, his brother ran track for Prattville. So he was like, hey, I told him you're going to be here for a while. Do you want to go out there and coach? And I went out there, you know, I talked to the coach. He knew who I was. And then he was like, hey, it'd be good for you to help us. And from that point forward, honestly, I was working as a case manager, and then I loved it so much that I was like, you know what? Forget that, man. Like, I'm going to go and work at the school so I'll be able to coach track. So since 2012, I've been coaching track since that time.
Wow. So you didn't, let's go back to high school. You mentioned Prattville. This is kind of where you grew up, was in Prattville. as you, how did you get into track? And it doesn't seem like as you were going through track in high school and college, which we're going to talk about some great people that you were coached by in both those places, that coaching was really on your, in your mind. Like it was more of just, you know, that's what you did. It's not what you could do. Is that right?
That's correct. I mean, I never jumped into track as a track savvy guy. So at Prattville, you know, I played basketball, and after basketball, they're like, well, you can't sit down. So you got to figure out a sport to play for the next semester. So my sister was my ride home. So I didn't really have no choice. So she chose track. So then it was like, well, I guess, and you know, like all coaches, I was like, what event can I do the least? Like, you know, all coach, oh, just jump into 400. And they threw him in the 400.
Whoa, wait, hold on. Which event can I do the least? And they steered you to the 400?
Yeah, I did the four. I mean, starting out, and I was like, man. And I just stuck with it, I guess. And then my junior year is where I just jumped on the scene with running 100 and stuff.
So the 400 went how we stereotypically think about the 400. You were like, yeah, I need to do even less. So we went down to the 100.
Man, yeah, that 400 hurt, man. That's a real man's race. But I mean, honestly, I guess even looking at the philosophy now, like the stronger you are running a four helps you as a short sprinter to be stronger. So, I mean, it really helped for me, but I really hate doing sprint workouts. I like doing four workouts over sprint.
Okay. So you mentioned, you know, you grew up in Prattville, which is not too far where I grew up over in Eufaula. So it's a little bit south of you by an hour or so. When you mentioned you weren't really track savvy. So were you would you consider yourself a basketball player first and a track guy second?
Yeah, I always played basketball and put more time in that. And then it's just, I want to say my junior year, my coach was like, hey, you might be good in basketball, but you have to start looking at realistically, like, just because you can play basketball, jump, man, you're only 5'10", man, where are you going at that height, you know? Mm. Like, let's be realistic. But he was like, naturally, you can run track, you're really good at it. And then, you know, I was like, okay, well, you know, my junior year, I didn't play no other sport, I just did track. And then I think that year is when I made it to state, and then it's like, all right, I must be pretty good at it, you know? And I mean, you got to think, it's kind of like we said earlier, like, I didn't have, like, a lot of coaching like you see kids now, like, you know, go to the summer track. I didn't even know a summer track, any of that stuff. What happened was, just off of natural ability, went out there and ran. And then I think my senior year, when I won state and stuff, I think that's when I was like, I do summer track, and I do this and I do that. But I mean, I still didn't really know what track really was until, I mean, summer track nationals. I was like, man, all these kids are incredible good. Like, right. 2005, 2004, I mean, running 10.5, you know, you thinking that, man, that's fast for that time. But, man, I got the national. I'm like, man, everybody in this heat ran 10.5. So that's when I seen track in a different perspective. Like, you know, you got to be pretty good. But nowadays, man, 10.5 is like a 10.9 back probably when I was running. But it's like, you know, track is a lot, man. It's more than competing. That's what I can tell you, because that's what I thought it was like football. Mm. Just get out there and compete hard. Like, no. Right.
I always like to play the movie in my head when you're telling a story. And so I can see you like looking at the last heat that just went. And it's like, wait a minute, all those guys ran 10.5. Like, wait a minute. I thought I was special, but holy crap, there's 10 of me out here.
It's crazy. But that goes with too, though, like, being in Alabama, it's a football state.
Absolutely.
And so it's kind of like, you don't really hear people talk about track. I remember going to a track meet when I was coaching Prattville. I remember Auburn coach was like, well, y'all got all of these good football players, why don't they do track? And it's like, that's just not what Prattville is living on, like running track. It's like, hey, football. I mean, it's crazy. I know you probably heard of Justin Thomas. Like, my first year coaching Prattville, I coached him, and he won state in 100. And then he went on to Georgia Tech and probably a year or so in the NFL. But it's like, man, it was hard getting that kid out there. I was like, hey, man, I know your uncle. Come on, let's come out there and do track. And then he was like, all right, because you know my uncle, I'd do it. But it's like, the kid was fast. Honestly, if that kid really put effort into it, he probably could have ran fast, because he went 10.7. And he didn't do no indoor track. He came out there for outdoor, did it for a couple weeks, won state. So it was pretty cool. But it's like, man, like, That state just don't focus on track, man. It's football only, really.
Yeah, I don't know how much it has changed today in 2024, but when I was back there, and I graduated '94, so this, you weren't even born in '94, Greg. It was certainly there was like five schools that won the state meet every year, and those were the five schools that took track really serious, like a Scottsboro, UMS Wright, things like that, right? Mountain Brook. Because to exactly to your point, it was football first, and if you wanted to run track, okay, we've got a track team, but there wasn't a focus on how do you train kids faster, how do you actually run meets, things like how do you stagger your season for the meets and things like that. Now I've seen it from the outside; it's gotten better. There are the state of track and field in Alabama has definitely risen and gotten a lot better. But I'm not sure and today I don't. I'm not down there in the high school side. So from 2020 to 2024, I don't know if we've got more people take it. Like would Justin Thomas been more eager to play to run track today than he was back then? Because like, oh, that's what we do. We run track versus back. That from that experience that you shared there. I'm not sure. I do know that it's gotten a lot better though. Like
It has.
what used to win state back in my day, it doesn't even scratch the surface today in 2024, which tells me coaching's gotten better and participation's probably gotten better in regards to the athletes in Alabama as well.
It has. I mean, shoot, before I left and came to Butler, I coached three kids that was just outstanding good. I mean, so it's kind of like it has gotten better, but I mean, even now, I can't call this kid now the top kid there. Last year ran 10 4 and 47. He's going to Alabama, did an indoor track, but it's like, oh, I'm gonna focus on football, I'm not doing track. It's kind of like in that just right there. It's kind of like I look at it, football and track go hand to hand, but I mean, some coaches probably feel too like, hey, I don't want the kid to get out there and tear his hamstring, then he can't play football. So you understand both sides of that, but it's like,
So you ended up winning state your senior year. What Prattville had to have been, we had six classes back then, 5A,
6A.
6A, 6A.
It
Yeah,
was 6A.
we were 5A back then. Where was state your senior year? Where was it held at?
Mount Brook. I
Oh,
won
is that right?
indoor, the first indoor meet. What was that track up there in going towards Huntsville? Where is that?
N hold on. What year would this have been?
05. I graduated
Oh,
high school
see,
05.
I was thinking you were so young that you got to compete in the crossplex, but no, you were in the barn up in Decatur.
There you go.
Dude, these kids don't know, Greg. That's where
That's
we
a,
were
what was
back
that, a
then.
dog track?
It was a horse barn, horse track, and the track was this, I mean, old. Like you fell, you got splinters on this thing.
Didn't even have heat in there, man. They had the heat
No.
filter in the seats and stuff, man.
Pe people think I'm joking. So you can corroborate this story. It was colder inside than it
And it
was
was out.
outside. I don't know how that worked. And it was so dusty from, just the oh my gosh. No railing on the outside rail. So if you fell off, you were just
Man,
dead. Yeah, you were just gone.
I ran a four in there, man, and I felt like I was gonna fall into the sand part, like running. So it was crazy, man. But I'm happy that the crossplex, and it's crazy because my son and other kids I coached ran in a crossplex one time, but I even ran in that thing, the crossplex. I think it's nice there, but that barn, oh man, like if you didn't run in that barn, man, you
People
don't know
don't.
what real Alabama indoor track is,
That is
man.
exactly right. I agree 100%. That the Crossplex is special. It's a great facility. It's more special to people who had to compete or coach inside that the horse barn in Decatur.
It is, man.
I
Hey,
love it. I love
don't
it.
speed in that area, man. They'll get you a ticket quick out
Yeah,
there,
I
man.
bet. Well, welcome to Alabama sometimes and a lot of other places. All right. So, you know, winning state in the 100.
So outdoor, I got they false started me. It's crazy. Like they had these new blocks, and I decided, like, man, I'm not using these blocks. So then false started, came in the state. I think me and kid from JD were the only two returners to come back because we made it to the finals our junior year. So it's, fall started, kind of disappointed, went to summer track, tried to do that up, and then came on JUCO, man.
So where'd you go to school?
Pratt.
Oh, you went to Pratt Community College. Is that right? So how did you get to Pratt?
So I was initially trying to go to Alabama. Well, initially trying to go to Auburn, but Auburn signed a kid I beat. So I was like, I'm not going to Auburn now. I'm gonna go to Alabama.
Okay.
Didn't end up going there. And then, great test taker, but my GPA was too low. So then I ended up going the route to JUCO. And it's crazy. I always tell this story because it's so funny. So I reached out to Cali Community College and,
Yeah.
Coach Phillips, which is passed now,
Yeah, great
was
mark. Yeah.
like, I reached out to him in the year before. He was like, yeah, this kid, you ran 10.5 in high school. But he was like, yeah, last year guys ran like 10.3s. You wouldn't make it. So it's so funny. So when I went to Pratt, I said, every time I run against Cali, I got to destroy them just because of that. And it's so funny. Like his son coached here with me a couple of years ago. And I remember telling his dad, because we had a banquet in Wichita. I said, Coach Phillips, I got to tell you this story, man. I don't know if you remember this, but you told me this when I was coming out of high school. And he said, I used to always wonder why you used to kick her ass, man. But now I know, man. It's funny. But Pratt was cool, man. I loved it there. Small town.
Very small town, and that is indicative of 99% of all the junior colleges in Kansas. I was in Chanute, Kansas. You think about Barton, and they're in Great Bend. That's a small town. Fort Scott. I was just, I went down to Pittsburgh for Division II at Pitt State, and I stopped in Fort Scott. Oh man, it gave me Chanute, Kansas vibes all over. Just a small town, little downtown area, a couple of restaurants and storefronts, and then the school. And that's it. That's what's there. Maybe a Walmart if you're lucky. Maybe,
Hey,
maybe.
Pratt got a Walmart, man. So
He
I'm gonna go to that
did.
one. They got a
Yeah.
Walmart,
That was
yeah,
a
by
big
the
one.
school, actually.
So what'd you think about, not that Prattville is the biggest city in the world, but it's really close to Montgomery, which is a big city area, right? I'm always curious because, I'd be recruiting kids from, big cities in New Jersey, et cetera, to, Chanute Camp, which is, they're small schools or small cities. What did you think coming to Pratt, Kansas from Prattville, Alabama?
Man, it's so crazy, man. So I didn't know what to think of Kansas. I didn't even know what Kansas was to start you off there. So when I got there, so my mom brought me. So once we got to Wichita, I'm like, oh, this ain't that bad. So my mom's like, we got to go 20 miles down.
Keep
So
going,
as I
buddy.
start riding, I'm like, so my mom's like, man, because going from Wichita to Pratt at that time, it really wasn't no like 20 miles, 30 miles. It's like you just pull up on Kingman and Cunningham and whatever. And I'm like, man, mom, I don't know if I'm in the right place. So I get there. It's a small little town. Like it's a truck stop. It was a small town. So I'm like, man, I don't know what this is. I'm not sure about this. But I mean, Pratt was small. True enough, it was extremely small. Pratt reminded me of Otagaville, Alabama. It's a small town. But it, but I enjoyed it though, man. Pratt is where I just jumped on the scene. My coach was a first year, straight out of college coach. It was crazy, but I loved it, man.
How did one of the things, and we'll talk about this in your current role eventually. We won't get there now, but because I want to stay on the athlete Greg side here. One of the things as a junior college coach in Kansas that we always had to concern ourselves with is there's not a lot to do in Chanute and Pratt and Great Bend, et cetera. So that means, we're dealing with 18-year-old kids, that there's a lot of idle time. I mean, there's a lot of time for you to get in trouble. How did you keep yourself out of trouble? How did you keep yourself focused on the academic and track side of it? Or did you, Greg? You might tell me a story of like, you got in trouble. I don't know.
So I went to college with a son. Like, so it's crazy. My son's a freshman here. And when I went to Pratt, me and my wife had my son like February of our senior year. So going into college, I already had the mindset of I had to get this done. I had to focus. And so my mom was big on, we'll take care of your part while you're in school, but you have to graduate. And that's more important than anything because you got to have a degree to take care of yourself, to take care of a child. So I went into Pratt where I wasn't like everybody like these kids nowadays. I didn't go out and party. Even if I didn't have a child, I wasn't a party person. I was a person big on when I got there, doing extra practice, studying, seeing how I can get better, and trying to perform. That was just my only goal. So I was just in a room studying or practicing or playing a game. I wasn't out going around or nothing, but I was just a quiet person.
So it sounds like you were focused on, I have to do something for myself so I can do something for my son.
Correct. Correct.
Mm. You know, this makes me think of a relay team, Greg. Trust me, I'll connect the dot here in a second. It sounds like you were running for a bigger purpose. Like, I'm running for my son. I've got to do the right things here so that I can, you know, get a job, make money, help my son out here. When, you know, you've seen this as a coach, we see this often where a kid will run faster on a relay, say on a 4x4, than they do in the open four. And it's like, right, man, if you would just run like that in the open, you could run, you know, yeah, blah, blah, blah. But I think what happens is when you're on a relay, you're no longer running just for yourself. You're now running for that team that's across your chest. I got to make sure I don't disappoint Billy and Tommy back there. You know, I've got to run fast. This reminds me of that kind of that attitude of like, okay, there's no partying, there's no getting in trouble, because I've got a kid, I've got a son that's who I'm really running for. That's who I'm really going to school for.
That was it. You know, I didn't, you know, growing up, my father really wasn't in my life. So I think I jumped on the scene with, you know, I had to do better than my father. So pretty much my grandfather and grandmother raised me. Yeah. So it was kind of like my grandfather born in 1920. So he didn't believe that man should be playing around. He believed that man is the sole purpose to provide. And he was like, hey, you got to get out. This is your providing part right here. You have to do your best to take care of this. So I mean, college was fun and stuff, but I think I knew I had to graduate and get the degree and do that part. Granted, even though I ran track, I still wasn't big on, oh, I got to go pro. I wasn't really big on that. I was just big on, I just want to run fast in JUCO, take it one step at a time and keep getting better.
Wow, that's interesting. You know, most of the time we're going to hear a story of like, you know, I wanted to go pro, I wanted to do this. This was an end to justify the means. This was, how do I get my degree? Okay, well, they'll pay me to run. So fine, I'll run because I need to get that degree.
Correct. I truly agree.
That's interesting. So, you know, one of the things that I love about junior college coaches and athletes, the junior college national championship to me is my all-time favorite meet. It's just, you know, it's a bunch of, this sounds cruel, Greg, but I mean this in a very positive manner. It's a group of misfits. And I say that because I'm a misfit. Like, you know, it's a group of kids and coaches that need second chances, third and fourth chances. It's kids that want to prove stuff. It's kids like you, Greg, that chip on your shoulder to Coach Phillips of like, oh, you don't think I'm fast enough. Okay, well, then I'll show you every time I'm on the track with your kids. It's a bunch of chip on your shoulder kids and sometimes coaches. I resonate with that. So I love that meet. I love that junior college system. How did you take that fuel and work towards the degree and go through the recruiting process again? That's the unique part of junior college, right? You have to recruit and be recruited all at the same time, all the time. How did you, that sophomore year, as you were starting to look at other schools, finishing out your AA degree there at Pratt, how did that process go for you?
I think so. When I did my sophomore year, when I went into it, it's crazy. So my sophomore year, my wife had our second son. It's crazy. Man. I had a track meet the day she had him. So going to school after Pratt was pretty much like, you know, I remember a lot of schools I wanted to reach out to, Clemson, and I thought I was going to Clemson. And, you know, I remember saying, like, it's nobody's responsibility to take care of my kids or my portion, right? I was just all in to graduate in that part. So, you know, most schools feel like, I don't want you to come in here, you're distracted. Having kids can be a distraction if you're not mature enough. So I remember being at Nationals and, you know, I'm originally from Detroit. So Middle Tennessee came to Nationals, see me run, and Godfrey came there and Marty Scales. Godfrey is from Detroit as well. So, you know, he was talking to me about, like, you know, when he was at Middle Tennessee, he really wanted to just get better. He didn't really look at pro. He wanted to get better. And then, you know, Coach Roman was like, hey, Marty Scales will be your training partner, so you can come here. And keep in mind, remember I said I never was, like, all in track savvy. I was just all in to being the best while I'm doing what I'm doing. So Coach Roman and them convinced me, hey, come to Middle Tennessee. It's 4 hours away from home. You'll be able to go back and forth to see your kids. Your kids can move up here to off-campus apartment. So I was kind of sold on that part. You know, at that time, Middle Tennessee in the 2000s, 90s, big dominant sprinters. You got to think, before I got there, they had Orlando Reed. Before that, they had Godfrey. They had Marty. They had so many people before me. And, you know, Middle Tennessee is a pro style. So that means that your peers before you are coaching you and Coach Kerr. So it's kind of was one of those deals. So it fit me pretty good. It was close to home. I was able to go there and continue being good in dominant sprint. So that was cool for me.
You know, Middle Tennessee State has you nailed it, a great tradition, a great history. You know, the great Dean Hayes, you know, now passed away, built a tremendous organization there. You mentioned some of the sprinters and stuff, and I immediately thought of like Ronnie Bramlett started there, you know, the hurdler. Yeah. A hurdler of mine from Troy transferred there. Jasper Demps did real well there. It really is an amazing place there. I do believe when I was at Troy, we beat Middle Tennessee State every time, just to put that on record. I just want to make sure you knew
yeah,
that.
Y'all yeah, got us, man. Hey, we got a tie one of those years, man. We got a tie, man.
So what was life like? You're closer to home. You get to, you know, 4 hours is a lot closer than what Pratt was to Prattville. Yeah. So you got to maybe visit home and vice versa. How was the going into a 4 year institution, still running track and earning a degree?
I think so. Going in there, it's crazy. So, you know how now you have a good relationship with the coach. Me and Coach Hayes, like, you know, in those times, I remember going to his office, sit there, he had all these books in there. And, you know, I remember asking him, I was like, man, I see all these people you coach. Like, what do you coach for? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, and he said, I'm being honest with you. I think he was a baseball person. And he shifted to track. And he was telling me, like, you know, I want to give kids an opportunity. Like, I don't care if they make it to NCAA. I don't care if they make it beyond. I want to give them an opportunity to get the degree. But while they're doing track, I want them to do something they love. So when I came to middle, it was kind of that right there, you know, like he didn't really care if I made NCAA. He cared about score good at conference. We'll take care of you and your family. That's all you have to do and do your schoolwork. So I really prided on that, did my job while I was there, ran like nationally and all that. So it was pretty cool. I just think what he said to me is kind of what molded me even being here at Butler. I really care about giving the kids an opportunity to see how good you can be and reach your max potential. So that really what drove me really once I start coaching, like Coach Hayes theory, and keep going from there. So
what were you doing academically? I think you said social work in psychology. Is that what you ended up getting a degree in?
I got one in behavioral science, which is psychology. So it's crazy. After I graduated, I wasn't even doing psychology, man. Like, you know, because I was good in electronics. I was working on electronics until I got a job working with behavioral kids in a facility. And I mean, after that, I just stuck it out with psychology. But in my heart, even though I did that, my mom was in the psychology field. So that's why I kind of did stuff. So it kind of was like one of those deals where I knew once I started doing track, I wanted to do something where I can coach and continue doing running. That's really what I want to do. I didn't want to do no psychology, man. It's like, but I felt like coaching, you're going to deal with kids' mental. You're going to deal with kids going through personal problems. You're going to deal with developing and growing kids, maturing them. So psychology kind of went its course into coaching with me. So then it's like, oh, this is probably why I was pushed towards that field, because it all goes and ties together. But I mean, personally, like, psychology was cool, but I think track is a better way to utilize being like a psychologist though.
It's hard sometimes to see the things that you're working on today, how they're going to connect in 5, 10, 15 years from now. But you're right that, you know, when you talk about behavioral sciences and psychology, it's like, you know, I've talked to a lot of coaches on a daily basis, Greg. I feel like that's used on a daily basis with coaching to student athletes.
You do. You got to sit and listen. That's a big thing. So when I was going to grad school, I was up in D.C. at this thing we had where, you know, they were teaching you how to be the family therapist or whatever you want to be. And part of the weekend of the course, you had to you had to be the psychologist and you had to be the person telling your story and switch. And I think when you're listening to track, even in JUCO, because I'm more so than Coach Long really in D1, but in JUCO, every day it's you dealing with this kid emotionally, or you dealing with somebody that don't have a father figure, or you dealing with a girl didn't have that wrong person. You're counseling these kids every day, which there's no problem with it, but you know, I personally think that's why I like JUCO more so than D1, because we're going to develop the kids and mentally make sure they're ready for when they go next. So we're going to have to do the babying, the hand holding, the maturing, the understanding, chasing around, making sure you go to class. And that last chance you show that they put out there and the ladies, the counselors on there, that stuff is real, man. Like, I know some people don't like Last Chance U because it does expose JUCO, but in reality, you got to think, if we don't do our part doing that here, how would they ever make it D1? They're not going to make it because they're not mature enough.
Yeah, and we desperately need a Last Chance U track and field, by the way.
We really do, man. I think it'd be pretty cool because I think everybody look at life as just football and basketball, but
yeah,
I think track is the same as both of them. It's just that we run, but everybody think you can just go out there and run.
Right.
Man, that's a false fact, man. Yeah. Everybody can't go out there and run, but I think it'd be pretty cool to do a Last Chance U on track because you see a lot of things behind the scenes of how much work they put in and what have to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And where they come from and where they end up. That's everybody loves a redemption story. The kid who, is a father, is a high schooler, doesn't have a lot of options to go 4 year. So you go to Pratt and then become something, that is a story that is, told many times in the junior college world. And the other side of it where they go and they continue not moving down the positive path and don't end up going to a 4 year, et cetera. So there's a lot of amazing stories that have come through junior colleges for track and field. That's for sure. So you'd mentioned earlier, you get your degree from Middle Tennessee State, you go back to Prattville, you kind of, help out at your alma mater kind of coaching. So how did coaching become the thing? Cause you've got a great responsibility at this point. You have two children. There is no bigger responsibility. The coach of the greatest program, however you want to define that, is still not as important as the dad to children. So how did coaching come into and with Prattville, and how did that continue to grow for you?
So when I jumped on Prattville, I think after coaching Justin, I think that next year it was so I was assistant. I wasn't the head coach on them teams. So when I got a chance to coach summer track, that gave me the chance to show how good I really was. Because when you're the assistant, you can't really show how good you are because it don't matter how much you coach, the credit is going to the head coach. So in the summertime, it was a kid that was at Prattville that I coached that summer. And it was another kid from Montgomery that I coached, and I coached the Montgomery Dream Team. And, one of the kids that I coached at Prattville, this kid only ran 10-8, 10-8 and probably 22. You probably them are okay numbers. Then it was another kid that ran 21-8 and 10-8. So I told him, look, hey, you run summer track for me, I guarantee we can get an opportunity to go to college. So one of the ones that the one that was a senior, he went from 11 In 2 weeks, he went from 11 to 10-5, and he went from 21-8 to 21-14. I ended up getting him to go to Barton. And, he went to Barton, then he went to Auburn. The other kid that went to Prattville that was a junior that I was coaching, he ended up running in the summer 21-5 and 10-6. And his senior year, he ended up going to Mobile Media Champions, winning the 200, coming second in 100, and running 10-5 and 21-4, and he ended up going to Auburn. So I think that plateau helped me out, because I think going into that next year, I didn't even make it past really a whole year. I remember in December, I was like, man, I can be doing so much better. I want to go somewhere else so I can show how good I am coaching. So I reached out to Coach Turner that was here, you know, it's crazy. He ended up coaching at Pratt, and then he was coaching at Houston, then he ended up landing. He went to Garden City, then he landed here. And then I reached out, I was like, hey, you know, I'm trying to get in college. You know, a coach told me that y'all had an offer. So I reached out and, you know, he was like, I already got a sprint coach. And it's crazy, the sprint coach went to Auburn.
I was going to say, for such an Alabama fan, a lot of Auburn connections here, Greg. I'm just saying.
The Haven ended up, he was really good at Auburn running on their 4x1s and 200. He was up here coaching. So, you know, I came up here and, you know, Coach Turner was like, hey, here coach the girls, you coach the boys. And magically that first year, I had Mr. Eli Hall Thompson on the team, which Eli ended up my first year after going to Texas Tech after coaching 2 weeks, end up with JUCO number one, 21, I want to say 21-19 indoor. And then, you know, they're really good that year, but I pretty much from there, the story is it. I was here and I was just coaching a lot of good sprinters, whatever, but you know, fun times though, man.
And you've been at Butler ever since.
Yep, since 2015.
And when did you take over as the head coach?
What was it, 2022?
22. Okay. So let's talk about Butler. What did you, so coaching collegiately, coaching collegiately at a community college is different than running as an athlete at community college. What did you have to learn? What did you have to do differently now that you're a full-time assistant coach at this point at Butler? What did you have to do differently? What did you have to learn?
So when I was assistant starting off, I didn't really have a lot of responsibilities besides recruit and coach sprints. My second year, I ended up coaching the women and men, but I think recruiting was a big thing. I remember Coach Turner used to always say this, like, to keep a coaching job, you need to be able to recruit and you need to be able to coach. If you can't do that, then you're not going to be good. And I remember he used to always say, you can't make millions either. I was thinking in my head, man, not trying to make millions. I'm just trying to be a good sprint coach, man. Like, but that was just me at the time. So, you know, man, just coming in here, I think from after Eli year, I just wanted to make a name. And I mean, I have to throw this person's name out. Coach Tony, man. Like, Coach Tony is the reason I even got into JUCO because I sent the kid to Barton and he was at Allen. But when I came in, he was at Barton. And I remember he was like, hey, man, you're going to be pretty good. Don't worry about it. Like, they first year, man. Barton, like us and Barton went heads up like that my first year. That's what I do remember. But Coach Tony, which he had New Mexico now, he is the one who put me on the plateau to get to this level. So I always got to give him a shout out. But you know, shoot, man, when I got the JUCO, man, I was like, man, these dudes are killers out here. But I don't care nothing about that, man. Like, I mean, I brought a kid from Montgomery with me, Eli Hall. Then we had a couple other kids, man. But recruiting was really the biggest thing because, man, recruiting is so cutthroat, man. You can call a kid, you like them, I'm going D1. And you're like, what? Like, oh man, it's so crazy. But recruiting is the biggest thing, which you got to be good at it. You got to get kids and you got to take some rejection out there. But it's like, if you can recruit, you're going to be good. But, you
So
know, that's.
let's talk about recruiting here a little bit because, you know, Greg, I think you're right 100%. And when I coached, that was kind of my big thing. I was known as a big recruiter and all that kind of good stuff. And in junior college, it's so unique because, first of all, at least when I was there, so I was there the 2001 season. Here's what I didn't like about recruiting for junior college. I felt a little bit like a shark. And what I mean by that was, you know, I would call, you know, the top 20 kids in the country, top 20 seniors in the country. And the first thing I would ask for is a transcript. Because
Right.
if I was recruiting them, they're top 20. So these kids were all wanting to go to, like, I lost kids to Miami, Mississippi State, Alabama, Texas. I mean, they, you know, these were the best of the best. So they were going big time Division I, not just Division I. So I would ask for their transcripts first because if they had the grades and the test score, I was out. It's like you're not going, you know, I'm recruiting 13-5 women hunter high hurdlers. You're not coming to Chanute, Kansas versus Miami because you qualified so you can get a scholarship there. You're not. So I was always like, oh, this person has a 3-5 and a 22. It's like, oh, that's great for them. I love that they qualified. Good luck to you. I'm done. I'm going to the next person. And now I've got this 1355 hurdler, and she's got, you know, a 2-2 and a 12. And it was like, oh, good, I get to recruit this person. I hated it that they didn't have good grades, but okay, I get to recruit her. I felt a little sharkish about that. Now, I was giving kids a second and third chance, so, you know, there's good things about that. How did you handle recruiting, not only in the sense of like the grades and the athleticism and things like that, but also what is your, like, I don't want to say style of recruiting, but like maybe what do you think recruiting is? Is recruiting simply trying to become, I hesitate to say this word, good friends with the recruit, or is it about salesmanship? Talk to us about recruiting. Cause I think a lot of four-year schools could learn a ton from junior college coaches in the recruiting world, because you've got to recruit and get your kids recruited. So you're always in recruiting mode. You think it's 24/7 in the 4-year world. It is 24/7 in the junior college world. Let's talk about recruiting philosophy, et cetera. I'm going to stop talking now.
No, so after Eli, I was always a coach. So I'm going to go get the big dogs. And if they reject me, they just reject me. Mm-hmm. But if they can see, and I remember my first year, I told Eli, I'm going to make you really good, which Eli came out of high school, I mean, U.S. number one from Texas. So it's mm-hmm. kind of like, you know, I had to use him as a platform. Like, hey, if people can see that you were U.S. number one and you came to JUCO and then you did really good JUCO, mm-hmm. then people are going to want to come here. So I have to sell you. And then I had another kid, Lamarian, from Montgomery. He was really good too. Like, he developed in his freshman year, he went from 11 to 10-3 and from 21-8 to 20.8. So I had to use those two to market everybody else behind. Okay. So the next year we got this kid, Xavier Atkins from Florida. Probably heard of the kid name. Man, honestly, that kid was phenomenal. Like, for Butler, he won every summer track nationals since he was 9. The kid was just real deal. So we end up getting him. We got a kid from Minnesota, which I didn't even know people ran track in Minnesota. It's so cold up there. But Keem Sirleaf, he came in here. He did a phenomenal job. We had Quinn Poole. He was U.S. number 4, like, coming from Georgia, ran 46 out of high school. Then we had a good hurdler from Georgia as well, came with him. So we built that year, like, I'm going to go out and just get some really good kids.
But Greg, you said you talk to these kids and tell them, hey, we're going to make you better. Every coach says that. There's not right. a single coach that calls a recruit and says, hey, you're going to come here and you're going to be the same, or you're going to be worse. Every coach is, I'm going to make you better. So you talked about those kids that you guys signed, and those were awesome kids. I have to assume if you're recruiting correctly, that also means you missed out on a bunch of other good kids as well. Cause, you know, you got to recruit numbers here. You don't bat 1,000, you don't recruit 10 kids and sign those 10 kids. You recruit, you know, 50 kids and sign 5. Why did you lose kids? And when you lost them, what did you do about it? What I mean by that is there things that you changed about how you recruited because you didn't sign X, Y, and Z?
No, I think so. That year, so when you recruit, obviously, you know, you put on your board, like, we got an Eli here. Mm-hmm. We got this kid here. So now you got to look at, what do we need to fill in
right
to win? So it's like, for example, honestly, once we signed Xavier, which he was a 10-4 dude coming out of high school, I'm like, all right, we got him. All right, we got 4. So we don't really need to get no more of that. Then we signed Quinn, who ran 46, 21-3, and 10-4 out of high school. So realistically, you got 4-5 good sprinters that can run 1 through 4. So then you go after, we had a kid on our team from Ghana, which he ran 47-2. Then we had a long jumper. So we had a good long triple jumper. So we seeked out to get another jumper from Florida, which we end up getting a kid, but really it's about connections. Like, so if people know who you are, and you got to think, that year we still had DeHaven here. So me and him, when I came in, we recruited so hard together. Like, he had connections, I had people I knew. We just put that together and we got the team we got. And it's crazy, that team the next year, we ended up winning regionals back to back, something that Butler never did on the men's side ever. So it's kind of like, you got to seek out what actually fits your program, what kid fits the program, because it can be a 10-1 kid, great, right? He don't fit your program, you know, so you can't go get that kid that don't fit the program. And two, fill in what the kids that can come in and win. Because I think nowadays you don't have to talk to the coaches so much no more because you got Instagram, Facebook. But I personally think talking to the coaches is key because you don't know how that kid is. You know what I'm saying? We recruit in numbers. We're not recruiting how's his mentality. Do he work hard? So I think you got to talk to the coaches. You got to see if they fit your program. And they got to understand coming in what you expect from them. Because it's junior college, but you got to think, if you got an Eli Hall Thompson, who was U.S. number one in the Quinn Pool, you marketing that already. It's like, hey, man, you can come here. And the thing is, you may not get the D1 offer you want coming out of high school, but you do a year or two here, you can get that offer and go to that school of your choice. You just wasn't ready at that time.
Right. Okay. So, Greg, you know, one of the advantages that I enjoy as the host of this podcast is I get to push back and challenge the guest. Okay. So here's what I want. You know, I'm going to put you in an unfair situation here. I'm going to not ask you necessarily to represent all of coaches, but I'd like to get your viewpoint on this. So you said about a kid that fits your program, and you made specifically of like, hey, if a 10-1 kid's out there, but they don't fit your program, they don't fit your program. I hear something similar to that every day on social media that, you know, if a kid posts bad social media posts, you define how, whatever that means, or they get in trouble, et cetera, you know, I'll pull a scholarship. I've seen coaches, I have not actually seen a track coach of this, but I've certainly seen some, I'm going to be nice and not add the adjectives that I want to add here. Some football coaches or basketball coaches say, oh, yep, kid, cussed on the court, and so I pulled his offer. Things like that. I hear that all the time, okay? But I have to call BS.
Yeah.
And I call a little bit BS. You push back here on Greg. So, you know, I get the challenge, but you get to throw it right back here, Greg, right? You said, if I find a 10-1 kid and they don't fit my program, then they don't fit my program. I have to believe, Greg, if you had a 10-1 kid that, however you define, doesn't fit your program, but wants to come to Butler, I feel like you're going to have him on Butler's campus, Greg.
It all depends. So this is what I say. So let's say you get the 10-1 kid, he gets here, right? He already know he's good, right? The thing is, when you get some of these kids that good, they think sometimes they know more than the coach. And you got to look at where you're at. Now, if you're going to a university, their win is a university. I think a lot of kids and coaches look down on the JUCO level. It's like it's a sorry conference. My kid to dominate the conference. So a lot of times they're looking for insight from that coach too. So you got to think, reason why he won't fit once you get him here is because you're telling him to do this. He's coming back telling you, hey, my coach said this would be the best thing to fit me. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you can get some that's lazy. You know, mm-hmm. I've had talented athletes that were lazy. Mm-hmm. And I've had athletes that wasn't up to par yet. So that talented athlete, because they didn't have the coaching starting off, they got there because they worked their tails to get there. They wasn't lazy. They were accountable. They showed up on time. They put the work in. I always say I would rather get somebody that's less talented than somebody that's really talented. Because talented athletes like, well, I ain't got to do it. I don't have to do that. I'm not going to do that. I'm gonna slow down on this rep. I'm not going to go hard on this rep. They don't give it their all because of some of these summer track kids are naturally talented. They can go out there and run fast. But at the same time, it's like when they're pressed, you realize real quick, like, oh, man, nope, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. So it makes them not for your program, because when you need them the most, if they don't want to do it, they're not going to do it. And so now you don't gave this kid a scholarship and they can't produce for you.
So what I'm hearing you say is you would rather run 41 flat in your 4x1 with a bunch of hard work in showing up every day. Yes, sir. No, sir. 3.5 GPA type of kids than run 40 flat with some kids who miss practices, maybe have a 2.5 GPA and maybe don't say yes, sir.
I'm put like this. I'm not gonna say that 41 because that's crazy.
I know. But that's what I'm saying.
That's crazy.
Okay,
but
hold on. Let me change the numbers then. The exact same two groups of kids I said, but yeah. the yes or no sir kids run 40 flat, and the 2.5 GPA kids run 39 flat. You cool with running? You cool with running 40 flat?
Okay, I'm gonna give you something. You're gonna understand what I'm saying. So. The kid I said ran 11-0 coming here, right? You know what he ran leaving Butler? He ran 10-1. So Jesus. what I'm getting at is you will take that kid right there, and I'm not saying bring them all in that low level.
I would take the 10-1 kid 100 times over the 11-flat kid.
But you got to think, too, like what I'm saying is if you got them 2 years, and the 11-0 dude probably was a 10-4 guy in high school, just the quality of coaching. You're from Alabama. I'm from Alabama. The kid was from Alabama, so it's like the coaching wasn't there because, like we said, football.
That plays into it.
Saying is you can bring a 10-5 kid in there, 10-3 kid that's willing to follow and work hard like that kid.
Yeah.
Whereas you can bring a 10-4 kid in, 10-3 kid in, and I mean, the numbers don't really have to matter. The thing is having a kid that's going to work.
Yeah.
I've had kids that's fast, and early on in the game, they took shortcuts where – oh, we got another rep. They go hide on the side of the van. So they don't, they went to the bathroom.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So at the end and goal is, I mean, shoot, everybody that done ran on most of these Butler teams, they came in here and they developed to get faster.
Sure.
Not came in here such a 10-2 like Eli or came in here a.
Yeah, I don't doubt the developmental side. And I think that's where, like for me, if I'm going to tell me if a coach is good or not, and I don't even deal with those type of comparisons, to be honest with you. But I don't care about did Greg produce a 39 flat 4x1 team. I care about, well, what was the PRs of those kids before they got there? If Greg, if you do go sign, you know, 4-10 flat kids and run 38, whatever, that's awesome. And you may get coach of the year because that's an amazing time and you win nationals and those kids all go on to 4 years, et cetera, et cetera. That's awesome. But that doesn't tell me if you're necessarily a good coach. There are components of that are still a good coach, right? Because you are still managing four different individuals, getting that stick around that fat. That is coaching. That just because you have 4-10 flat kids, you ain't running 38 point just because of that. You've also got to coach. So that doesn't take away from that. But I'd rather say, wow, you know, Greg is an amazing, amazing coach. And someone go, dude, his 4x1 team ran 42 flat. He's not that good. Like, oh yeah, no. But what you don't understand is those four kids all ran 15 seconds out of high school. I'm making up crazy numbers here, by the way, but you know what I'm saying? Like, no, he ran 42 with a bunch of, you know, those guys were milers. They weren't 100 meter people and he still ran 42. He did a great job coaching. That to me is what's more important is the development of the kid. So I don't doubt that at all. Yeah. I just push back on coaches, and I'm not necessarily hearing you saying it like what I'm pushing back here, but I hear this a lot on Twitter, you know, where I live on a daily basis, right? Of if a they should call the coach, the high school coach, because if the kid's a bad attitude, you don't want him on the team. And I'm like, dude, if that kid's a 45 second 400 meter kid, Quincy Wilson just set the national high school record in the 400 this past weekend over at Bullis High School. Joe Lee is the coach there. We had him on the podcast last year, I believe. I don't know Quincy. I assume he's a really good kid, to be real frank. In fact, Joe Lee told me he's a great kid. This is a terrible comparison. But if Quincy has a bad attitude, I don't think a single coach does not recruit him.
I agree.
But coaches will say that. I wouldn't recruit a kid who has a bad attitude. And it's like, if he runs 45 flat, you will.
I think after, put it like this, I probably said it wrong. After you get that kid on campus and you see how they are a semester, that's what I'm trying to say.
That's different. No. Yeah. Okay. Now, Greg, that is an important distinction. If I hear coaches say, oh man, when I get them on campus, if they continue with their bad attitude, we might have a different conversation. You might not be on the team next semester.
Yeah, that's what I'm
that's
trying to
different.
Say. Yeah, that's
and
what
I,
I'm saying.
And I love that attitude because I think as coaches, and I don't want to say especially junior college coaches, but I'm going to say especially junior college coaches, you have to give, we're talking about 18-year-old kids here. You have to give second, third, fourth chances. Greg, I'm not sure you sit in the seat that you are today if someone didn't take a second, third, fourth chance on you. I certainly don't sit where I sit today if someone didn't give me a second, third, fourth, heck, for me, fifth, sixth chance in this world.
Yeah.
So when I hear this almighty quotes of like, oh, well, if, you know, if the coach tells me that they have a bad attitude, if they skip a rep, they go to the bathroom, et cetera, I won't even recruit them. And I'm like, first of all, I don't believe you. Second of all, I think that says bad about you as a coach. Like you know, I understand that's not ideal, but you're a leader. Shouldn't you then try to lead people to help that kid to understand he needs to go 100% of what you ask for him on each rep and go to class every day and things like that? That's what you're in this position for as a coach. You're a leader.
Yeah.
You don't.
Well, you know, leading
people who already do things perfectly is not a hard job. That's not being a leader. Leading is taking people who need guidance and helping them to become great adults, much like you have become, Greg. Yeah. I mean, your story is a story of, I don't want to overstate and say redemption, but your story is someone who did not have, was not doing necessarily the right things in grades wise and stuff like that. But look where you've become. You've become a leader of young men and women because people gave you a second, third, and fourth chance. And now you get to give young people a second, third, fourth chance. You easily could have been given up on, Greg. Would you agree?
Sure.
18-year-old Greg, father already in high school, Prattville, Alabama. Come on. Greg, you're not supposed to be successful. Stay in town, go work at the local Piggly Wiggly, and that's what you're supposed to be. And instead, someone took a chance on you, and look what you've become. You're a great father, a great coach, a great person. That's what you have the opportunity to do today.
I agree. I think the JUCO level, like I said before, we are the ones that are going to, you know, everything that I mentioned is funny that we're probably both went and did the same thing at this. You had the kid to go over here and do this. You had to go chase the kid down for study hall.
Yep.
But it's like, you know, when I say sometimes, like, not for this level, like, I had a athlete on the team, like, gave numerous opportunities. But, you know, at JUCO, we'll give 100 opportunities because we understand this is it. You know what I'm saying? This is it. There is no D1 because you're not mature to go there yet. There is no, it can be maturity. Your times ain't there. Your grades ain't there.
Right.
But at this level, we have to get them there. And, you know, it's like you have to get them tough love, but the guys on the team, you got to make them accountable, understand, like, money, value. I personally think, I always say this, I think we should have something to educate these kids coming out of high school and parents how hard it is to get a scholarship and what are we looking at? Because everybody think they can have a full. But then when you look on your team or D1, it's like, man, everybody's not worth a full. What is a full worth? And I think a lot of people get confused. Like, maturity comes into that. Accountability, you can take care of yourself. And I feel like when you come to JUCO, we have to teach you that and educate you on, hey, we got to teach you to start doing stuff D1's going to do. So when you get there, they expect you to know this. So you're ready. So, you know, I'm not going to say I'm going to turn down a kid because I would recruit in, like, those kids you're saying. It's just that, if they get to the point where they're, like, not doing the schoolwork, because that's JUCO problem is that schoolwork. Yeah, like, 100%. Males, I think they think, I want to go pro. Mm-hmm. Everybody think nowadays they can go pro. And everybody think, too, like, oh, I can BS in the classroom. Because I'm good, they'll slot me by. And I'd be like, man, where is that college at? Like, because that's not happening nowadays. But,
right. You know, isn't that crazy? You know, when I was coaching, we used to call 10 flat the money line. Like, if you ran 10 flat and under, you could get paid. You know, Adidas would kick you a $30,000 contract, et cetera. Nowadays, I mean, God bless, you can't even run 10 flat to win the junior college nationals. How do kids today think they're going to go pro? Like, it's harder than ever to go pro.
Yeah, everybody, honestly. So 2022, I had a young man that was from Trinidad on my team. And, you know, we wanted him to go to North Carolina A&T. That's where he was going. Then, because he ran for his country, couldn't. Well, you know, I think we had to shift and was like, hey, man, we got to make it where you go pro. Keep in mind, that kid only ran 10-4 and 21-1 the year before. So I was like, okay, cool. We're going to work it. Okay. It's crazy that next year he went 9-9 and he went 20.10. End up going to World Indoor, coming fifth. And now he's a pro athlete for Puma. And it's kind of like everybody thinks their story is his story or anybody else's story. But the thing is, people don't realize as the maturity, the understanding, the time he had to put in. We put a lot of time in him to be prepared because He's working on his best, finish his bachelor's degree, even though he's pro. But the thing is, you know, kids are so focused on going pro, like you just said. Like, man, 10-1, 10-09 don't even get the NCAA finals nowadays. So I'm not sure why kids running 10-1 think it's going to be easy. It's going to be easy to go 10-0. It's going to be easy to go 9. American, unless you're running for another country, them times are crazy in America. Like, it's hard, but it's like, you don't want to shoot kids' dreams down, but you're like, hey, how about we run fast in college, get the degree, and after the end, if you're close and you can make it, try it. But if not, make sure your education is plan A and your running is plan A. Because if you, it's just hard nowadays for these kids. It's harder now than when we were running track, man, because.
Agreed. I was in the elevator with a kid. I can't remember what school he was from, down at Pittsburgh. And I was like, oh, what, you know, what event did you qualify for? And he's like, oh, the 60. And I was like, oh, that's cool. You know, like, what's your PR? And he's like, yeah, 665. And, you know, 665 for Division II, that's smoking, right? And I was like, oh, where are you ranked? And he's like, yeah, I think I'm coming in like eighth. And I was like, oh my God. Like, not too long ago, 665 would win Division II, like big time. Now, this kid's like, I hope to make finals basically as a 665 kid. And it's just unbelievable. I don't know how anybody can think they can go pro today. You got to run, you got to basically be a gold
Super
medalist.
fast.
It's unbelievable.
But you got to think, people think a 661 is even make it, that won't even make you the Nationals for Division One.
It
You know what I'm saying?
is fast. We can't say it's not fast. There are just a few more people that are faster today than that.
Yeah. It's crazy, man. Look at
I would
JUCO.
love to have a 661 PR, right? Like, I'd call myself fast if I had that PR. I wouldn't have made the finals, but I'd be fast. You know what I'm saying? All
You
right.
would have made it this year.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. All right, wrap up the recruiting conversation for us. You said something interesting that I like to have this conversation. When college coaches are recruiting, should they also be calling the high school coach?
Yes.
Why?
I think because you get an idea of how the kid is. And I say that because last year I had somebody on the team and, you know, like they were pushing a person to get here and come here. And I was recruiting the crap out of the person. But I didn't so much like sit down and have that conversation with the coach. But honestly, being truthful, if you got a kid that can be a knucklehead here and there, all right, you're not going to tell that coach that, you know why? Because you're trying to make the kid go somewhere successful.
I was going to ask
So,
that. Okay.
and that's what it is nowadays, is like, man, the parent and them are telling that kid, hey man, make sure when you get there, you change, you work on your behavior. But I think that's something a coach should know too, because if you get here, and I get it, I got to be dad to the kids. You get it. But if you get here and that kid is fussing, fighting, can't control themselves, I think that's something a coach should have knew. Don't try to just push the kid in the door because
But what
it hurts them.
motivation does the high school coach have? And by the way, tons of empathy for the high school coach. You know, I'm a big defender of when, you know, college coaches will say, you know, these high school co like think about our high school coaches. You know, you didn't have the best high school track coach in the world. Mine either. Great guy. Love my high school coach. Amazing man. But did not know how to coach, you know, like we do today, right? But I have a lot of empathy for those coaches because they're also teaching full time. They are also parent spouses, probably parents, have their own passions, charities, et cetera. You know, they're not doing this full time like maybe a college coach is. I have a lot of empathy for them. So what motivation does a high school coach, you call up a high school coach on a 10 flat kid, just make up numbers here, and this kid is just a terrible kid. You know, he's out till 1 o'clock. He's barely eligible, or he's not eligible. If you know, maybe if you're recruiting him at the junior college level, but he's a bad kid. He's making a lot of bad decisions. He's not a bad kid. He's making a lot of bad decisions. What motivation does the high school coach have to tell you that truth? In reality, the high school coach has the motivation the opposite of like, you know, he's a tough kid, coach, but he's got a good heart. You'll do well with him. You'll be a good leader for him. You know, I just don't understand where the high school coach can even tell you, hey, Greg, this is not the kid you want, man.
Yeah.
What motivation do they have for that?
You know, usually, like, let's say me and you recruiting the same person, but it didn't go good with you. And, like, I come up and ask you, like, hey, man, did you recruit this kid? And then you just tell me, hey, great athlete, but, you know, there's some kinks there you're going to have to work out with this kid. Like, you're going to have to pretty much like shadow him, like make sure he go to class, go get him and walk to class, making sure he's going to study hall. And that's what JUCOs do. Like doing that and trying to mature them is better than, you know, having that. I mean, honestly, it's all the same. Like you're maturing that kid at this level. And I mean, I'll say I don't have a ton of them, man. I don't have kids mature, kid have mental illness. Like you have a lot. And you know why we have that? Because D1s don't have time for that. They don't have time to be walking around with this kid. They don't have time to be making sure they go to their appointments. It's just so hard nowadays. But I feel in JUCO, man, we're like the dad moms of this level because it means more to us that they make it far. Like, you know what I'm saying? It means more to us. So a couple years now, we're telling this story that, hey man, I remember this kid, nobody wanted him in high school because of his behavior. He did run fast, but nobody wanted to take a risk. And years later, this kid got his degree, ran good, and then got married and changed his whole life because you gave him that opportunity. And that's kind of the thing with recruiting I look at. Like, I don't know if you ever check up my Facebook. I'm always reposting old posts or reposting like kids that I've coached for years ago because that is important to me that I've seen these kids go through the system of Butler and then they made it D1 and they did good. I mean, shout out to Sean Brown, Texas Tech kid that was here last year, won. I mean, him and Nazio, Zach, well, they all did phenomenal jobs. And I'm gonna say Andrew too. Like these kids came here last year and they did their job. They went D1 and all of them did great for their teams this year. And you know, that is a recruiting story of Butler. Like we love to see our kids leave. We develop them here, mature them here, and they go on to the next level because recruiting is hard because you're going to have to take a bad kid. You're going to have to take that 10-1, 45 kid who everybody gave up on. He went to a school, got kicked out. You're going to have to take that chance on him, but you got to understand, like, you would take that chance with him over a 50-point kid that's doing all this stuff. He don't even do his schoolwork, but you want to make sure all your kids that come here, you're recruiting, understand like your goals is their goals, and you want them to go far. Not looking at my accolades. Look, I want you to go far. If you want to go pro, let's make sure you run fast here to go D1 so they can set you up for that level.
Yeah, now that I agree with Greg, that when coaches say, you know, if they're a bad kid, bad apple, whatever, I won't recruit them. I think that is true for the 50-second quarter miler boy.
Yeah,
That
true.
I agree with. That 45-second quarter miler, I'm like, I think you're gonna be start talking about how of a dad figure you are, and you're gonna help this kid become better. The 55
Hey,
kid, you're
you
like
are,
someone else.
man.
Agreed. But I'm saying that's how you're gonna justify. Well, that's why I still signed him versus the 50-point kid. You're like, well, someone else will have to be that father figure because I'm not taking that. You know what I'm saying? So I agree. Okay, so one of the many uniquenesses of a junior college coach is. And again, this is why I just, you know, I love this level and I love the coaches like yourself that are in this is every year a high school coach has to get his or her kids recruited. Division one, division two, junior college. They're always trying to help their seniors go on to college. On the 4-year side, every year those coaches are recruiting kids into their program.
Right.
You, as a junior college coach, are doing both all the time. You are constantly recruiting kids into your program. And you're trying to help your sophomores go on to 4-year schools.
Agree.
How so? So you're kind, you know, the same question I had about that high school coach. What motivation do they have to tell the coach the truth? Like, hey, this kid's not that great. You know, you're gonna have a lot of problems. How do you handle? You don't have all your kids at Butler. I'm sure all your kids at Butler are angels and are perfect and have 4.0s. Yeah, okay, good. I saw the face. Good. So how do you handle when you have a kid that may have some issues that a coach needs to know? Hey, coach, you know, I know the kid's running 45 or 46, whatever. Just so you know, we struggle getting him to class or whatever. How do you handle when that 4-year coach is calling you about that individual?
I'm not gonna lie, most of the time when them 4 years call you, the first thing up they say is how them grades.
Sure.
So 9 times out of 10, like I'm gonna be honest, All of the kids that we talked about growing and developing, by the time it gets to that last year, we already don't develop them and mold them into, we got to go to 4 o'clock study hall. We already mold them. Hey, what is this? You got to go to class. So when we're getting them calls now, it's like, good kid is going to be really good. You do have to stay on him grades. That's what I did. And it helped him successfully, like making sure he go to study hall or calling him like, hey, make sure you're here, popping up, seeing if he's there. He's going to run good. He's going to be respectful to you. He's real coachable, but you have to stay on that. And personally, most of the kids that's leaving going to these 4 years, we don't have those issues. I'm not even gonna lie to you. We don't have those issues
They've
because
already kind of weeded themselves out at this point.
they weed them, but all of the kids that's running good, we'd be on them about that study hall. You know what I'm saying? We have kids go to study hall. They don't even have to be there, but I always tell them, look, man, if you want to get money and pay for school, if you got a 3.0 or 3.5 or better, that's more money going towards your scholarship that you can get school paid for. So we got to be realistic here. Like, you came here because of the grades. We don't want your grades to be your problem going to the next school. So I think we sell it on that, and we got really good academic people here that, like, we get a monthly thing or every week, a couple times a week, I'm checking, did they go to class, what their grades is. So me and my assistants, like, we'd be on that stuff, man. Like, you got some that you got a man just fuss at all the time, but like we said about the 45 kid, like, I treat them all the same. 45, whether you're the 50 kid, I want you to do good and give yourself opportunity.
How do you handle, so ego is not bad, bad ego is bad. How do you handle the bad ego? You're consulting with a lot of kids on where to go for the next level, where they go to a Tech in Alabama, Troy, the greatest university in the world. But even, and we've said a lot of D1 schools here, but there are many awesome opportunities for NAIA and Division II schools as well. How do you handle when a kid is maybe not at the Division I or SEC level and really would thrive at the Division II, Pitt State, a Northwest Missouri State, et cetera, Adams State. How do you handle your ego of like, oh, I sent a lot of kids to Texas Tech versus, oh, I sent a lot of kids to this D2 program? How do you handle consulting that kid in the manner that they actually need to be consulted with?
So I always tell the kids here, like, once you start running, you got to know where you stand, right? And I say that because, if you got a kid running indoor 21-2, he's more than most likely going to go 20 point low outdoor. 6'6 kid probably going to go 10-1. Then let's say you got an 800 guy can go 153, 152 indoor. He's going to probably run 140 something, right? Well, then what, when you got the kid that's running 156, 157s, I always tell them, look, 4 year is 4 year. Some of us going to be D1, some of us going to be D2, some of us going to be NAI. At the end of the day, you want to go to the best version where you can go, and let's look at your progression. If I run 155, I probably can go to, I probably can go to NAI, because if I grow and develop and get better under this coach, I probably can be a 153 kid, 152. I can score at that level, make the final, and I'm worth my scholarship. That's what I pretty much tell them. As far as the ego, there's no ego with me on going no place, because I feel like at the end, I want kids to go where they can get a scholarship and fit. Now, you got those kids that don't sometimes listen to that. They'll be like, hey,
Sure.
I want to go D1. So shout out to Mario. He goes to Troy. I know you'll be happy at that kid. Like, he a Troy guy. I always tell Middle Tennessee better, but hey, let's ride with it. But that
Obviously, the
kid.
kid's much smarter, so all good, all good.
He came here, man, and he worked his tail off. Always was a good, stellar student. And he got down to running 156. Great kid. I mean, I remember one of our 800 guys got hurt. So he was kind of hurt too, but he got healthy in time to run on the 4x8. Helped us out. We came third. Good stuff. The thing is, I remember telling him, like, hey, you may not be a 150 kid. So I said, like, let's look to going to NAI D2, or if you want to go to D1, let's go to lower level D1, where you can, your role is to score at conference. You're not going to be a national guy, you're a conference guy. He accepted that. He accepted that, and he went to Troy. And, you know, he's on his second year at Troy. But the thing is, having kids like him understand where my talent lies and where I can go is going to help these kids out in the long run, because you got some kids go to lower level D1, which they don't understand. Like, you're never going to nationals. If you left JUCO running 56, the chance of you being a 150 per, I mean, a 50 person is going to be slim. But it's like, it's the mindset of the kids nowadays more so than me. That's what I think.
Do you ever consult with the kid? I think I might be right on these kind of number, and these are just example numbers, but let's say you've got a 670, 60 meter guy, and they've got 2 years left, right? You know, they're in your program 2 years, they still got a junior and senior year, and they think, man, I'm 670, I'm fast, so I want to go to, you know, SEC, Big 12, et cetera. But you know, it's like, man, hey, it's 670. Even if you get down to, and you probably will get to 665, you, heck, maybe 664, 663, you ain't going to nationals there. However, if you go to Grand Valley State, Pitt State, Northwest Missouri, you know, these some of these amazing Division II programs, and you get to 665, like, you got a shot at winning. You know, you got to go faster, still in Division II, but like, you, but you'll go to now. You run 665, you go into nationals in Division II. Do you ever consult about the experience of like, man, there is something special about going to the national championship, whether it's D1, D2, D3? That it is unbelievable what it takes to make nationals. So do you ever consult about like, you know, hey, you might have a better college experience going to this Division II program because you can contribute to the team, go to nationals, maybe you win a national title for crying out loud? Or is it more about, and I do air quotes, the Division I experience? Because I don't understand, I don't necessarily think. And, you know, we went to two great schools. Mine was a little bit better, Troy, but you went to Middle Tennessee State. But that, and those were Division I schools. I'm going to take the shots, buddy. Those are Division I schools. I'm not sure that your experience, my experience, was better than a kid that goes to Grand Valley, Pitt State, North, you know, the schools that are in the top five winning Division II titles every year. I'm not sure the Division I experience. I just don't. I don't know that those kids have a less experience because they might have had a better experience, to be real. Like I look at those photos of Pitt State winning the national title from this weekend, and oh my God, they are the happiest kids in the whole world. And I'm not sure that my experience at Troy was better just because it was Division I and I didn't go to nationals.
I always say, like, because I mean, like Pitt State, they got a lot of JUCO kids on that team, right? And that's another good thing. A lot of those JUCO kids realizing that I have D1 talent, but I don't have D1 focus in the classroom. So I probably need to go somewhere where I can stay eligible, because it's easier to me, because I was D1, you were D1. It's easier because you remember you got to go to your. We had something called the Enhancement Center, where you had to go there, do 2 hours a day in there with your tutor, make sure before you left they sign off on all the schoolwork. I think D1 is a little bit easier when you have all that resource, but you got to get there to get that resource. So it's like, to me, like, I think kids' ego is bigger than understanding a coach telling you to go NAIA D2. They feel like it's a letdown. I even heard a girl tell me this before. I work too hard to go to a JUCO. I work too hard to go NAIA D2. But I'm like, I'm looking at your times. I mean, a girl going six,
You
a
didn't work that hard.
757, like, where's 757 going? Let's be real, in today's world, like you said, 670. If you go NAIA D2, you can make it to nationals and look at your progression. If you progress to 6'6", you progress to 6'740, you can score, if not win. It's okay if you don't go D1, because I wouldn't want to go D1 if I know, looking at my time, I don't have a chance of making a top 16. You know, I don't have a chance of making a top 48 to go to regionals and then a top. You don't have a chance. So your only thing is you're going to be a conference good person. And it depends on the conference you go
Maybe,
to.
right. Yeah,
Yeah, it depends on that.
maybe,
So it's
right.
like, you know, I remember a couple of years ago when I first started, I was trying to get a kid to Alabama. And the coach was like, hey, I like this kid. He a 10-4 kid, but we only can give him 40%. He's only a relay leg. He's not going to make none individually. And, you know, I understood that. Like, nowadays, that 10-4 dude is not getting 40% because that's not even scoring at SEC. So I think it really boils down to, honestly, I think the kids, the athletes, got to put their pride aside and realize, where can I go get my degree? pay for and where can I go and use my talent and score and help the team? Because everybody ain't D1 good, and I see a whole bunch of them go there, and it's like, ugh.
Let's keep going on your journey real quick before we do, though. I was kind of playing in my head how I was given that conversation of you and I's Division One experience. I kind of made it seem like I ran at Troy. I want to make sure I don't misrepresent myself here. I did not run Division One track. I did not run collegiate track at all. I coached my whole life, so I just don't. I literally was thinking, I was like, well, I kind of made that seem like, because I said something like, well, I didn't go to nationals. I'm like, well, yeah, because you didn't run, dude. That's why I didn't make it to nationals. So I just wanted to put that out there for everybody listening that I don't want to compare myself to Greg athletically, because there is no comparison there, buddy. Your 100 meter PR might be my 60 meter PR. So just want to put that out there. Quick correction that I, if I made it seem that way,
Hey
that was not
man,
meant, not me, not me.
Middle Tennessee won conference almost every year, so I'm just gonna
Dude, bro,
let
they,
that simulate. Like,
I
hey,
have nothing but respect for Dean Hayes's teams and now Keith, his teams. A lot of respect. I just know Troy was better. Anyway, so
well.
let's keep moving forward. Right, Greg. So I'm really interested in you're an assistant coach for Butler. You're doing a great job. You're learning a lot. You're learning your method of recruiting and networking with 4 year colleges coaches. And then in 2022, so a couple of years ago, you become it's different. You become the head coach. My favorite question to ask everybody when they get their first head coaching job is, were you ready? Were you ready to be? You've got a couple of years to kind of look back on now. Were you ready to be the head coach in 2022?
So when I stepped on, I'm gonna say, far as coaching, yes. Far as developing, probably not at that time. And reason why I say that is because when you're assistant, you coach and you recruit, you kind of be like, the mentor to the kids, you closer to the kids. When you become the head coach, you still can do all those things, but the thing is, you're responsible for what comes in, like where, like you're responsible for planning. You're responsible for like making sure everything goes right. You're responsible for, hey, are we signing this kid? Do we need him? Making all of these decisions. But I personally think, I'll say this, man. Shout out to Dustin before me. He really helped me. And I'm not gonna lie, when I came on, so me and my assistant now, we both was like, interim head coach type deal. And I'm not gonna lie, we both growed and developed helping each other along that way, more so than anything. But I can say like Dustin Mettler really played a big factor in me understanding like the paperwork. But honestly, the paperwork and stuff wasn't hard. Honestly, I'll be truthful. None of that was really hard. It's just once you start managing this stuff, you know what I'm saying? Making sure stuff planning, because me and my assistant both did before we came, like this position, we did itineraries, we did like recruiting, we did a whole bunch of stuff. So I think in that category, more developing, growing that part. But far as I mean, you don't know what to expect when you're a head coach. I can honestly say that because you're looking at it, yeah, it's more money, but it's like, man, they don't tell you the time and the effort and the things you got to put in, because it's a lot of time goes into preparing. Like just before you caught, I was finishing up our itinerary just for this meet, starting on next week's meet. So it's like being ahead of things is mainly the main thing I would say. But I say probably like now, last year, I'm probably in a better fit position now than I was 2 years ago, but it's like you got to understand what you're doing. And I think in JUCO, you can make a lot of mistakes. I think I listened to when I was about to become the head coach. So I listened to a podcast of Georgia's now coach, Coach Carroll, and a couple of the lady coaches that was head coaches. And I listened to them all was saying how certain positions, certain jobs you take, you can make multiple mistakes in. This position you can't. So I'll listen and listen to a lot of that stuff. You're gonna probably hate this. I listen to a lot of Nick Saban stuff, on being a head coach. And I also talk to Coach Hayes about like, hey man, how did you handle this? How did you do this? And he'll be like, just do it this way, you'll be fine. Do it this way. Cause Coach Hayes, believe it or not, man, that guy's about that money, man. He was about mark, like when you go in his office, he had the little TV with the marketing on there. So he was always about money. So, and I think that helped me now because I'm always about fundraising for our team. Like we work K-State games this year. Yeah, last year we worked Oklahoma State and getting paid 25 to 5K to support your team, doing a lot of stuff. So those things right there prepared me after the fact of understanding you got to raise money, understanding you got to do these things. But I wasn't prepared when I started. I can give you, be honest.
You know, that question is kind of a test question, and it shows whether, you know, you're kind of your level of humility and self-awareness that you have, you know, because as a former head coach myself, you know, there's no way, no one is doing a good enough job, in my opinion, as a head coach preparing their assistant coaches for future head coaching positions. Some are doing a job, they're helping. You know, you're not going to be completely blind when you become a head coach, but no one is really, you don't know the job until you're in the job, kind of thing. So I appreciate that answer. When you think about it, you know, and you're in your second or third season as your head as the head coach. Were you the 22 head coach? So 22, 23, now 24. So when you look back in 2.5, you know, years of experience, what did when you got the job, what was something that you thought was going to be hard for you? Like, okay, I know nothing about this. I'm going to have to grind and learn this, but actually was a little bit easier than you thought.
I thought so. You know, when you hear people talk about that paperwork, I used to hear coaches be like, oh man, I'd be in the office all day, but I'm not a procrastinator. I'm always a person I like to get stuff done ahead of time. Like, I literally had stuff for nationals prepared probably months before that even happened. Like, everything is always prepared months and months. So me and my assistant, we just overview it, like going to Texas this week is like, all right, we got this, we got this, we got this done. We just need to do this. So that's it, really. We really don't have, we don't procrastinate everything. So I think that's a bigger thing. But I thought paperwork was going to be harder than I thought, which it really wasn't. But really, what helped me is I seeked out people, like budgeting, for example. I went and seeked out the financing people to explain, like, what am I looking at? Because if you know how to, if they show you that budget paper, you just look at numbers. You don't
Numbers.
really, you don't know what the heck is happening on that paper. You like, what have I spent? Where is that at? Like, make it like your actual check at the bank or something, but it's just numbers. But, I have people explain to me that stuff right there. Explain to this is what's going out. Explain to where is this money going? Where is this money? That's the main thing, knowing where the money goes. But the biggest thing is, I thought too, well, I didn't think fundraising was going to be hard because remember I said I coach summer track. And then if you coach summer track or you coach high school, man, you remember those car washes? You wouldn't get no money, but you like, man, we're going to get like $500. And you come out and only have $100. You remember those, like, you try to hit people up for money in high school, but football already did it already. But, so I already knew about the fundraiser stuff, how to get money. So really, the paperwork and the budgeting
Yeah, that's
was
good.
something I thought.
What advice would you give? You know, there's people listening right now that want to be a head coach, or at least think they want to be a head coach at some point. What advice would you give that assistant coach today to help them start preparing for a potential head coaching position in the future?
I think you need to, two of the biggest things is you need to sit down and have your coach go over you with like paperwork, like how to do it. Like, because that's, you got to know how to do, like, so you putting in, you're trying to buy something. It's a way you got to do it, a way you got to go through, have them go over that with you, have them go over their budgeting. Remember I said, I didn't know what nothing but numbers. So sit down with the finance department, have them go over that with you. Have them to like talk with you about the fundraising, who you're talking to. Like, so we got me and my assistant, we do the fireworks thing, right?
Oh,
But I got onto that with Coach Mettler and then I just kept it going. So keep those connections as well. Keep those connections with recruiting. Like if you got a connection with recruiting Africans or whatever country, keep that going. Like, keep developing those people. And patience, man. Like, I think being a counselor taught me a lot of patience, taught me a lot of that. And I think I told my assistant this morning too, that When you come into a head coach position, you used to assistant coach. Remember, I said you're the mentor, you're the friend, you're all these things that are above, right? When you're the head coach, you got to make decisions sometimes to cut a kid because of discipline. You got to make the decision sometimes, even though you know it's going to go bad for the kid, but you got to understand the kid has to respect you and it has to be disciplined there. And sometimes that can drain you because it's uncomfortable for us to discipline a kid sometimes. And, you know, when you want the best for the kid and they just keep burning you, even though it's not, you don't want to do it. Sometimes you got to do it. Just like parents, we don't want to whoop our kids, but you have to have them understand what's wrong, and how to do better and right. So I think the biggest thing is respect, discipline, learning paperwork, learning patience, learning budgeting, learning how to prepare for national meets, like do stuff ahead of time, set up, like schedule your hotels ahead of time. All these are things, I'm being realistic with you, I wasn't taught that coming in here.
Right.
I just had to learn on the fly.
Right.
And I think if the biggest thing is if you don't procrastinate, you'll be good in the position, because you can't procrastinate in that position.
You've said that word a few times now about not being a procrastinator. You can't procrastinate. How have you developed your anti-procrastinating genetics? You know, it's easy for us to say, well, I'll do that on Friday when it's Monday. And, you know, it's easy to push off stuff, especially in athletics. And what I mean by that is there's less deadlines. There's not no deadlines. There's just less deadlines on an athletic side than there is on a, you know, maybe a professional setting, a business development setting type of a area. How have you, like, have you always been kind of against procrastinating, or has that been a muscle you've had to train up to today as a head coach?
So I think so. The coaches before me were procrastinators. So I kind of seen how this leads to that, this leads to that. Like, I've seen those things already. So I think the biggest thing I always say is being an assistant, you look at head coaches of things you don't want to do. And you learn the things that's good. So, you know, I mean, talking to Coach Hayes kind of gave me more insight on how to prepare, how to be ahead. And I mean, really just learning stuff, because I feel like, so the week of a meet, if you already did the uniforms, if you already told the team, like made the itinerary, when we leaving, you made that a week or so ago. The week of the meet, you just overviewing, making sure you didn't miss nothing, right? Well, if you a procrastinator, you may have missed somebody's name out on the itinerary. You may didn't enter this in, or like sometimes you do this with entries. You can do the entries, right? But you missed a person, or this person, like you can go back and overcheck that and make sure, oh, we missed this guy, we got to put him in, or we missed this relay. If you're doing that on Sunday and the meets the previous week, by Wednesday, you just, entries are due Wednesday anyways, we can just overlook, we can just make sure everything is good, make sure we got the meals, make sure we set up, we're going to do catering in. These are all things that when you don't procrastinate, you can get done ahead of time. And I think my assistants learned that too. Like, hey, we got to be on top of this. This got to be done early. Turning uniforms in. Like when we have team meetings on Sunday, everybody got to turn their uniforms in, because I wash them, hand them back out. That is stuff like being late and on time. That's another thing. Like, so I think it's something over time by watching, being assistant, being at the JUCO level, I developed and I understood, like, man, like, I do not want to do that, or I don't want to be late, or we got to leave early. Like, I looked at the itinerary, or I looked at it, the schedule got changed, so now we have to leave at a different time. These are all things you do when you on top of stuff. But when you like, oh, you're not on it, oh, they changed the time, you didn't know that, oh, no, I didn't pay attention to it. It's stuff like that.
I hear control the controllable. So you have your own time and things that you can control. You can't control if that meet changes or the bus gets a flat. But if you are controlling all the things that are in your control, you're more able to have time to figure out the things that aren't in your control. And how do you correct off of those? That's kind of what I hear you say.
Correct.
Yeah, I love it. Greg, wrap us up today, man. Tell us what's got you excited about Butler Track and Field this year, next year, in the future. Tell me So what's got you excited, man? You guys got a lot of things to be excited about.
Yeah, man, I'm always excited about my support, my help, like Coach Mark, Coach Manny, Coach Rich. These guys, man, they go out and they recruit their tails off. They make life a little bit easier for me, you know, by helping out with kids and stuff. My assistants, they make life always easy for me. I'm excited, man. We got a good group of kids. Indoor may not win like we thought, but, you know, I'm a person, like, we just got to get back out there and work harder. I'm excited about outdoor season. You know, last year we fell short. We was trying to break the JUCO record in this 4x1. We went 39.89, which was trying to go 39.86 to break it. But hopefully we do it this year. Hopefully these guys keep working, staying healthy. The girls going to be really good. I'm excited, man. You know, we didn't go to Texas Relays last year. We went year before, had a kid make the final. Great thing. So now it's like, let's see how life goes. You know, I'm excited to see how all of the kids that we coach here at Butler, how they do this year. Our class last year did phenomenal this year at their Division I school. So that's always a blessing, you know, to see it, they're doing good after here. But, hey, man, Butler, man, we love working hard. We love grinding and we love being prepared. So, you know, we're looking towards redemption for indoor. So
I love I'm excited. I love it, man. That's awesome. Greg, thank you so much, man. You know, one of the most valuable things that you can give me is your time. And I know how busy you are coming off of Nationals, getting ready for outdoor meet. And, you know, like I said, you snap your fingers and outdoor conference regionals is here. So just so grateful for your time. Really appreciate hearing your story. I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned there. And I'm really grateful for our conversation about recruiting. I think there's a lot of myths and covered eyes over recruiting. And I think there can always be more transparency and honesty with recruiting. And I think conversations like the one you and I had today can help high school coaches, college coaches, and the athletes themselves to get better fits for them as they work towards college or not, you know, depending on what their goals are. So I really appreciate that conversation with you as well.
No problem. I enjoyed it. Hey, don't forget, Middle Tennessee is the best. Stop.
I had my hand on the stop recording button and didn't click it fast enough. All right. So Blue Raiders, they do an amazing job. I do love them. I'll be on record right here and say, I do love my Middle Tennessee State Blue Raiders. Host the Tennessee State meet every year. It is a great facility, great program, great coaches, and even great athletes come out of there. So I'm thankful for the Blue Raiders for producing guys like you, Greg. I really am. Troy's just a bit better. So thanks for being here this week. I appreciate everybody just weekly coming in and checking out these amazing coaches, just like Greg here is really awesome. I do want to do a quick plug. So if you're listening to this the day it drops, April 1st, starting tomorrow, April 2nd. So all through April and all through May, every day, except for on Mondays, because we have our regular episodes on Monday, every day we've got about a 20-minute podcast where we are interviewing a high school coach from every state in the country, including Washington, D.C. So for the next 51 days, we've got a high school coach coming in. And what we're doing is we're exploring what their state meet is all about. So and it's an alphabetical order. So tomorrow, April 2nd, Alabama is on the clock. So we're going to have a coach from Alabama, from Locust Fork, if I remember correctly, come in and we're going to ask, you know, what their state meet looks like. How do you qualify for it? What events are you doing there? What would you change? Things like that. And so this will give you, if you listen to all 51 of them, and it's alphabetical. So Alabama all the way through Wyoming, it'll give you an understanding of the differences in each state meet, what events they do, how they qualify. It's quite fascinating what's going on out there in the individual state meet. So starts tomorrow, one a day, April all the way through May. I hope you join us. I think it's going to be awesome. Greg, thank you for joining us. Join us next week, everybody. We're going to do it all over again. And join us tomorrow, starting the almost at the Alabama State meet, starting with the Alabama State meet. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week.
If it goes to appreciate the coach, the ones who point people most. Every season needs a voice of reason, speaking of growth. Got a prep for you, carry the load. It's coffee to the soul for those of us who stay on the go. Proper handoff, stay in the zone. What you packing for the road? There's more than one way to go. Take notes, that's paying your toll. It ain't practice if your purpose ain't clear. It can't happen till you listen with both ears. You can't mentor without a mentor's years of experience. You can reinvent those years. Every plan's got a stand to deliver up to. And the price, sacrifice. Can you give up you? It's a choice and a fight, not a win or lose. It's not a ploy, but advice so y'all can make more moves. It's not about how to, it's all about why. You don't know till you know who you are inside. 6 million ways to tie, choose none. So we all cross the finish line, the work ain't done. So we learn from the experts, we all gotta put in the legwork. Gil Athletics is a network, it's all about connections. Put together for the profession, so every track coach could be your blessing.